Hi there, this is Keith Cooper,
Peter Haller,
Chris Dixon,
and Bob Zanotti, and we're going to have a cheese fondue party. Well, you hear arguments about it, but the Western Swiss canton of Neuchâtel lays claim to having invented cheese fondue. The word fondue comes from the French word meaning melted, which is exactly what cheese fondue is.
There are different recipes, but the one from Neuchâtel calls for three types of Swiss cheese, Emmentaler, Gruyère, and Vacherin. They are blended together in white wine, a Swiss spirit called Kirsch, and garlic.
And the chef for our fondue party is Keith Cooper. Keith, are you ready?
I am indeed, waiting to go.
Well, let's go to the SBC kitchen, huh?
Okay.
Get out of the chair.
Take your
take your wine.
Got to be careful. Got to use these later, huh? I won't forget my wine glass. Let's go.
Okay.
Oh. Careful, Pete. Yeah, and the SBC kitchen is just around the corner. Let's go.
It's a long way.
You got everything set up, I hope.
I'm very good at this, I should point out, you know. I make a lot of
Well, let's not make any claims until we've eaten it, huh?
Oh, it'll bounce.
That's a sight. Okay, what do you got? You got cheese, huh?
Lots of cheese. I have some cloves of garlic, which you see I'm trying to break. And with this clove of garlic, with fantastic sleight of hand, I'm going to rub around the inside of the fondue bowl like that.
Well, garlic is important, eh?
Yes, very important indeed. Afterwards, you break up the cloves of garlic and chuck them into the cheese as well.
Now, what kind of cheese?
Peter, what about get your fingers in of the cheese.
Peter Haller stealing, stealing the cheese.
I can put the bread.
Oh, of course, the bread is important. You have to cut up the bread
actually,
into cubes.
To be fair, one of our secretaries, our Dateline secretaries, Jackie, came down and cut up the bread. I think we should mention
that. Noble. What about the proportions? You know, of course, as we said a minute ago, you've got Gruyere and you've got Emmentaler and there's a bit of Vacherin. What are the proportions in this mixture?
Well, to tell you the truth, I don't know, because this is a fondue that I buy ready made from a cheese shop just near Bern.
The mixture's all cut up, shredded, and
they
ready
mix
to go.
It up to their own specifications, but it's still basically a Gruyere and Emmental base because that is the classic fondue.
My wife makes it. It's usually about two thirds Emmentaler and a third Gruyere and a piece of Vacherin, which gives it a nice soft consistency.
Well, I must say I'm disappointed, Bob. I thought you'd make it yourself.
No, not when you have a wife who could do it better.
Well, I've got a wife. Okay, right, the cheese goes into the pot, like that.
Okay.
Rather a lot of it. And it goes onto the
hot plate. Now, what about the wine? You've got to have the wine in here somehow.
Yes, we've got to throw the wine in at the same time.
You throw it in afterwards.
Wait a minute, we've forgotten. We've left the corkscrew in the studio.
By the way, how much wine do you put in? What's the amount of the wine?
About a third of a bottle. The bottle is, 7 deciliters, so a third to a half. Okay, we'll push it. It's less to drink if you put it in.
And what about this delightful Kirsch here?
Kirsch? Just put a drop of that, not too much, because it's fairly strong stuff.
Maybe 3 or 4 drops, huh? And what's this? Cornstarch?
That's sort of white flour, yes.
Yeah, sort of maize corn.
Yes.
And that gives it, a consistency?
Yeah.
Helps keep it together.
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, as soon as Peter gets back with the corkscrew, we can get started.
Here we go.
There we are. Let's go.
Right.
Please, hurry up.
Mike McMahon, that is.
That's Mike McMahon's own personal corkscrew.
It's much better than conventional types of corkscrew, and he's opened about 3,000 bottles already.
Okay, there we go. There's the wine officially open. And by the way, this is in keeping with the spirit of the evening. This is Neuchâtel wine.
Neuchâtel wine. See, it's quite sparkling and frothy on the top.
Good job. This is Samuel Châtenay.
Okay, here it goes.
Okay, there it goes in.
He
can't hear it.
He's divine butt in a moment.
Is there an ideal quantity of cheese per person? It's about 150 to 200 grams, isn't it?
Yes, about 150 to 200 grams, Peter, as you quite rightly.
You've got to be quite an eater, though, for 200 grams, really.
Well,
it's already eating it now.
Another thing, yes, I'm eating the remnants of the cheese here.
Yeah, and that reduces your lot by about 50 grams, right? Yeah. How much would that be in ounces, Pete, about 150?
Well, 100 grams is 3 3/4 ounces, so 200 would be about 7 ounces of cheese.
7 ounces of cheese mixture per person.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Bob, I suggest that maybe now we take a little break while I continue to make the fondue, because it'll take about 10 minutes.
Okay, boys, let's go back to the studio, entertain ourselves in the meantime, and hope that he's invented a fast 10 minutes.
Here we go. He's got it on maximum flame. I hope it doesn't burst the cat.
Well, I hope Keith gets here.
Yeah, I'm getting hungry. I'm feeling pretty
the
sharp.
The smell of that cheese.
The wine is all right, but it's hardly anything without the fondue.
Yeah. Hello, here he is.
Oh, here he is.
Oh, there he is.
bubbling. Right.
Let's see it. Oh, it's beautiful. It is beautiful.
Touch it in the microphone.
All right. How much flame do you want, Keith?
Just enough to keep... Right. Oh, that's the smell is fantastic.
I must admit, at one point I was considering staying in the kitchen and
eating it all yourself.
Hey, give me some bread round.
Everybody's supposed to take a handful of bread, of course. And these
keep it stirring.
And as soon as the thing comes off the fire, you've got to get right into it.
We lost a bit of heat between the kitchen and the studio.
Well, Mike McMahon has just come in with what? Oh, perfume?
Like
no, it's Kirsch. Ah, there's a good man. Thanks very much. Well, mind if I start?
A quart to midnight.
Okay, then goes the bread, and we stir it around in the pot and get that fondue.
I think we ought to, before we start, remember the old Swiss habit that if you drop your piece of bread, that your partner has to give you a kiss.
You kiss her first on your lips.
I think we'll drop that.
That's for mixed company, but I mean, there's another very attractive rule, too. That if you drop your bread in the pot, you pay for a bottle of wine. That's of course, right. If you're in a restaurant.
Hopefully this is free today.
Well, let's try it.
Okay. Right.
Well, I think it's excellent.
Well, your opinion doesn't count, but it is good. Yeah, it's very good.
It's all right, Keith.
It's good. Have you got pepper in
My
there, too?
My compliments for the bottle opener.
We got some pepper in there.
Yes, yes.
Black pepper?
Peter, I owe you a kiss.
You can give it to me next year, Keith.
Good thing this isn't television, right? No, I'm sorry. The trouble is, once you get on the fondue, you don't stop. You know, you can't become a hog about it.
There's got to be a dead silence in a second because everybody have their mouths full.
What I always wonder is if there's any alcohol left in it after it's been cooked, when it all goes away.
It's true. Is it a fallacy that you can get drunk on...
Children can eat it.
It's true,
you know, it has no ill effects, apparently. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty tough on the kids when you come to think.
Actually, you can taste the Gruyere, but I taste more the Emmentaler. There's probably more Emmentaler in there.
Mm-hmm. Getting on to Emmentaler.
Yeah.
Could you fill us in, perhaps, on...
I mean, on the cheese itself. Yeah. Well, it's funny because in black and white figures, the Emmentaler is the most exported cheese from Switzerland. But the interesting thing is that in many parts of the world, Emmentaler is known as Swiss cheese. You know, I mean, it's all Swiss cheese. Everything in here is Swiss, but it's called Swiss cheese. And I guess everybody's seen it. It's a cheese with the big holes. I guess it's the only way to describe it. And the cheese itself is made in the Emmental, which is here in the canton of Bern. It's only, 25 minutes from the studios here. And they started exporting way back 150 years ago.
Bob, you've been to... a cheesery or a dairy or a cheese factory, whatever you call it.
Yeah.
Do they sort of still make it individually, or is it pretty well mass-produced these days?
No, that's what impressed me. They don't mass-produce it. It's very picturesque and almost rustic. They can't mass-produce these things because, for one thing, there's not enough milk in the country. And all around the Emmental, all around Switzerland, we're talking about the Emmental, there are small individual cheese dairies. And their average output is only 3 cheeses a day. The cheese weighs 80 kilos. And the thing is, it takes 1,000 liters of milk. That's something like 250 gallons of milk to make one cheese. And there are even some small operations where they produce only one cheese a day. So it is small scale, even though it's the main export cheese. I got all this information, by the way, from Mr. Rittlisberger, who is the director and general overseer, we might say, of the Rittlisberger Cheese Exporting Company in Langnau, in the Emmental. And by the way, the Rittlisberger company also owns the Tiger Process Cheese Company, but processed cheese is a horse of a different color. Well, as you said a minute ago, Chris, I'm not sure who anymore, I was there at the cheesery, and Mr. Rittlisberger took me over to watch the cheese-making process about 9 o'clock in the morning.
Mr. Rittlisberger, exactly what is going on at this stage of the process? The cheese being made in here is about ready to be taken out. It's the birth of the cheese. This process started about 2 hours earlier when the farmers brought in the morning milk.
And this would be about 7 o'clock in the morning?
Yes, about 7 o'clock. Then they started to heat slightly this mass of milk, and when it reached a certain degree, a certain temperature, the cheesemaker put in what we call the curd. It's a extract of calf's stomachs. We had to put this in order to make the cheese. This material is an enzyme which the calf needs to digest, actually, his mother's milk. It turns the milk solid in the calf's stomach.
I hope this won't put off too many people from eating cheese, the fact that you use an extract from a calf's stomach, but really it's a very small amount, isn't it?
It's a very small amount, and we don't put in the calf's stomachs at all, but powder made industrially in Denmark.
So it's actually, in a way, synthetic?
It's synthetic, yes.
Now, what else goes into making an Emmental cheese?
Heat and skill. The enzyme turns the milk solid, the way a yogurt actually looks. Then the cheesemaker has to cut this mass into tiny little particles about the size of rice or wheat. And then he starts turning the mass in this container the way you see it.
And in fact, you mentioned these particles, these small kernels, and if we look into the vat here, this 1,000 liters of material, we see sort of white flecks coming up all the time being mixed around. Is this what you're talking about?
That's it. The vat, you can feel it, is heated by steam. It's a copper vat with a mantle with a empty space around, and this has to be heated up to about 45, 50 degrees.
Mr. Ertlisberger, here we're dealing with Emmentaler cheese, which has, of course, as everyone will agree, a very distinctive character, a very distinctive taste of its own. But the cheese-making process is roughly the same for other cheeses like Gruyere or Appenzeller, for example. Now, what decides the taste of a cheese?
Three components. First, the milk itself. The milk isn't the same all over Switzerland, and the fat content isn't the same either. Then secondly, in processing, the actual making of the cheese is different. If you make Gruyere, for instance, you don't burn it as high, you don't cook it as high as the Emmental cheese. Then the maturing process afterwards, after the cheese has been made, actually, is different too. Emmental cheese is matured in very warm, moist cellars, Gruyere in rather cool cellars, so the eye formation, the holes, are differently made.
Where do the holes in Emmentaler cheese come from?
The bacterias are the reason, not the machine guns. The propionsäure bacterien, we call it in German, they tend to eat away cheese when they are in a moist and warm climate. And when they have eaten the cheese, they form a gas, and the gas puts the cheese mass apart so that a nice hole gets to be formed.
So in a way, you're getting your new cheese secondhand. It's already been eaten by the bacteria.
That's exactly the way.
Keith, before we get lost in the fondue bowl itself, what about the Gruyere cheese? I think you're the man who looked into that in some mm-hmm. detail. That's well, also the second, or depending on the recipe, the first or second most important ingredient.
Yeah, well, you were saying, Bob, that the history of the Emmentaler cheese goes back a long way. Well, the same thing can be said of Gruyere, because, in fact, Gruyere first came to light of day in 1115.
Which is Gruyere, by the way?
That bit of cheese should be pretty white right by now, you've got to admit.
It must be. But Gruyere is in western Switzerland.
In western Switzerland, at the canton of Fribourg. The cheese gets its name from the town of Gruyere, or rather from the, I suppose you'd call it the county of Gruyere, because there was a count of Gruyere who told all his subjects back there in the 12th century to give him cheese instead of money. Uh-huh. He must have liked it. Nowadays, of course, Gruyere is not just made in that particular area, but also in other parts of western Switzerland as well. It's more or less the same as Emmentaler. It looks very similar, except the holes that Bob was talking about just now are rather smaller. And also, it's wetter. It's sort of damp, moist, sticky sort of stuff. And this is very important. The wetter it is, the better it is, for some strange reason. Something to do with bacteria, I think.
If people want to make a cheese fondue, if they're living in another part of the world outside Switzerland, they want to be able to get Gruyere cheese. Is Gruyere available?
It is indeed, but let's recommend people always to look for that official Switzerland stamp on the rind.
No imitations, friends.
Exactly.
And the rind, in fact, isn't something you stick on afterwards. It's just actually the outside part of the cheese which matures
blood. Yes, of course. Yeah.
And you can eat this, as a matter of fact. It's not doesn't look very appetizing, but you can eat it without any ill effects.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the history of the Gruyere cheese is one of the most interesting, perhaps, in the whole of the history of Swiss cheese. And somebody who knows a great deal about that is a gentleman called Rudolf Lustenberger. Cheese is strong. And I met him at one of Switzerland's most famous Gruyere cheeseries at Charmey in the canton of Fribourg.
You say that Charmey is no longer really the cheese-producing center that it was. How important was it at one time?
Well, about 200 years ago, Charmey was really the center of Gruyère cheese. In those days, Emmental cheese wasn't exported yet. It was made in the mountains and rather smaller cheese than today. Gruyère, instead, was already a well-known export product, shipped mostly to France, French territories overseas, the French Navy, and to the Duchy of Savoy, which in those days was independent. Yes.
Would it be fair to say, in fact, that in those days, everything generally known internationally as Swiss cheese was more specifically, in fact, Gruyère cheese?
That is so. Perhaps I should make one exception, Sprinz cheese. Sprinz cheese was already an exporting article well before Emmental and Gruyère. It was, in fact, shipped to Rome in the times of the Roman emperors.
Now, you say that among the customers for Gruyère cheese at that time, about the 17th century, was the French Navy. Now, France already is, of course, famous for its own cheese. Why should it come to Switzerland to buy its Gruyère?
In those days, France made very little cheese, perhaps not fresh cheese. Fresh cheese they already made, but cheese which could be kept for any length of time. And with Gruyère, you can compare Gruyère in those days with salted pork or salted fish, which was kept on board those sailing ships, which were at sea for sometimes 2, 3, 4 months without going ashore, without being able to buy new supplies. And they kept cheese on board ship because it would last 3 or 4 months.
Well, that's really good.
That's delicious.
Okay, come
on. Mm. Well, cheers, by the way. Huh?
Yeah, thanks.
Cheers. Cheers.
Of course, we should mention the white wine. I mean,
Yes, that's very important that the wine that you drink is also the wine that's used in the fondue. In this case, Neuchâtel.
Does it have to be a particular type of wine?
Fairly dry. Fairly dry.
I think.
Unlike you, right?
To act on a schoolmasterly note, a dire warning to anybody who drinks beer with fondue, because atrocious stomach upsets can result, apparently,
it's
if
a
you
good
drink
point.
Beer.
But you're
it's
lucky if you have a stomach left at all.
Beer is a no-no with fondue, right? Chris, we were talking before when Keith was putting together the fondue in the kitchen about a little bit of Vacherin that goes into this mixture. We have the Emmentaler and the Gruyère. And now this little piece of Vacherin. What's the story behind that? I recall that the French word for cow is vache, something like that. My pronunciation may not be good. Does this have something to do with the cheese itself?
Well, that would be the obvious and probably rather boring explanation, but happily there's also some legend attached to Vacherin. The legend takes us back to the 13th century in Spain, where records in the Abbey of Montserrat near Barcelona state that a monk called Vacarinos was in charge of the herd of cows, and it seems he originally came from the Fribourg area of Switzerland, where his father was a cheesemaker. And the legend goes on to say that after developing his method of making cheese, Vacarinos returned to Switzerland and became official cheesemaker in a monastery in this country, and hence Vacherin, in honor of this 13th century Swiss monk.
Good man.
Called Vacarinos. Yeah. True or false, it's a nice story anyway.
Is he any relation to Bacchus, by the way?
Perhaps.
Chris, what's the difference between the making of a Vacherin and, say, an ordinary cheese, and we can call it an ordinary cheese?
Well, I'm not very qualified, but the best person to answer that question is a cheese expert from the Swiss Cheese Union, which arranges the sales drives and export drives of Swiss cheese. He's Mr. Willy Buhlmann of the Swiss Cheese Union, and he explained the difference when I spoke to him in Fribourg.
Contrary to other Swiss cheeses like Emmental, Gruyère, which are the best known abroad, Vacherin cheese, when it's made in the big vats, is not heated, or it's hardly heated. And it's not being pressed when it's taken out of the vats. On the other hand, you know that Emmentaler is being pressed with about 3,000 pounds. Vacherin is hardly pressed. Now, the result is a softer cheese, which ripens faster and which has to be consumed earlier than a hard cheese.
Could you give me some of the special characteristics in terms of taste of Vacherin?
Well, Vacherin at a young stage is flat tasting as practically all young cheeses. When I say a young stage, it would be 2 months old. It gets tastier after 3 months. Actually, after 3 months, you should start eating it. And at 4 months, I would say that's maybe the upper age where it becomes sharper, or where the taste becomes a little bit more pronounced.
Well, that was Mr. Buhlmann of the Swiss Cheese Union.
It's really good.
And he also told me that Vacherin is gaining popularity in Switzerland and is rapidly increasing its sales outside the Fribourg area as well, as a table cheese, as well as for cooking purposes.
God, we're having a battle of the final digs here.
This is quite delicious here, yes.
This is the saddest moment of all when
Peter's even grabbing onto the pot to get let it
in. In the Fribourg area, the only real fondue is considered to be one made solely from Vacherin Fribourgeois.
Revolting.
And nothing else. Yes, I agree with you, Keith. I tried one myself, and I must admit that I missed these other cheeses and the wine and the kirsch.
That's right, it's made with water. Just with water, isn't it? Water and Vacherin.
That's it, yes. And it's a rather, to me, it seemed a rather flat taste, rather bland, you know. But the Fribourgeois were very proud of it.
Uh-huh.
I, in fact, asked Mr. Buhlmann, who incidentally comes from Bern and isn't from Fribourg, what his opinion was.
My personal opinion is the best fondue is made out of Gruyere, two types of Gruyere, a younger and an older one. And to top it off before you bring it to the pan, you add a little piece of Vacherin Fribourgeois.
I'll tell him about this one. I've spent the last, I don't know how many minutes, boldly eating away your fondue while you were explaining what it's all about, and now we come on to a cheese which you don't put into fondue, but which you can eat as a dessert cheese or even as a breakfast cheese, any kind of meal you can eat it to. It's called Appenzeller cheese, and it comes from the canton of Appenzell. I should say the two half cantons of Appenzell, which are two rather small cantons in eastern Switzerland. The cheese is actually made in the adjoining cantons of St. Gallen and Thurgau, but funnily enough, it's not made in other parts of Switzerland, and in fact, the Appenzeller cheese manufacturers refused permission for some Fribourg cheesemakers to make Appenzeller because they felt that it had particular qualities which could only be reproduced in the region of Appenzell. We can hear Mr. Fritz Meyer of the Zink Company, which exports many Swiss cheeses, including Appenzeller. He can tell us a little bit about Appenzeller cheese.
Well, it is a semi-soft cheese which has a unique flavor. This flavor is a result of a special treatment with substances made from different herbs, and they, in turn, have an influence of the flavor of the cheese.
Where is Appenzeller exported to mainly?
Well, the neighboring countries are the biggest consumers of this fine cheese, but also considerable quantities are being shipped to the United States, Australia, and to all other countries of the world.
Mr. Meyer, is there anything special in the production of Appenzeller cheese, or is it just a normal cheese in that respect?
It certainly has a special way of preparation. First of all, it has a relatively high fat content. It has a creamy substance, and on the outside, there this special smeary substance, which is applied during storage of the cheese in the cellars, results in a very fine, unique flavor, which we all know as the Appenzell flavor.
The history of the cheese goes back at least 600 years when it was first made by herdsmen in the eastern Swiss Alps.
Anybody want to make a comment before we have to fly into the ether?
No.
Okay, well, I guess the only thing we can say is that we've all enjoyed our fondue, our cheese fondue here this evening. Well, it would be nice if people listening today would try it out themselves. And by the way, if the listeners didn't catch the recipe, I wouldn't be surprised. We went through it in the kitchen before. Write to us here at SBC, and we'll be happy to send you the recipe for
the cheese, just the recipe.
Just the recipe for the fondue that we've had this evening, the Neuchâtel Oise. And our address is very simple. Cheese, SBC, 3000 Bern 16, Switzerland. Cheese, SBC, 3000 Bern 16, Switzerland. And by the way, tomorrow, speaking of celebrations, New Year's Eve, we have another party in store And you're all invited. I don't know if we're going to stay here and continue on till tomorrow, but in any case, there will be an open house party for everybody tuned in New Year's Eve. Thanks very much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.
All around, Prost, huh? Santé.
Thank you.